to talk to you about our Sharps injuries that we've been doing surveillance since 2001, and I'm just going to focus today on Sharps injuries among nurses. So just to give you a little bit of the background, before I do that, I should thank Natalia Fierceva, who's here as well, and Tish Davis for the help with the project, and we're funded by NIOSH for our work. So a little bit of the history. Back in 2001, the state of Massachusetts promulgated regulations requiring hospitals to use safe needles in their delivery of care, and then to also maintain a written exposure control plan, including in that, just as OSHA requires, written procedures for selecting devices and involving frontline workers in the decision-making process. They're also required to maintain a Sharps injury log, as OSHA is required. The difference is that they're required to send that data to us on an annual basis. And while we have several goals of our surveillance system, including describing the magnitude of the problem, really our main goal is to identify which devices are involved in Sharps injury. We are not a disease surveillance system, so we don't have any information about seroconversion, but rather just an exposure surveillance system. So the methods for our broad surveillance system, we look at all healthcare workers providing care within licensed hospitals. And so that can include not only employees, but students or physicians with privileges. And then we're looking at just bloodborne pathogen exposure incidents that are result of events that pierce the skin and mucous membrane. We look at things on a calendar year, and you can see the list of data elements that we collect every year. And so we get a record line listing of every injury that gets reported to employee health and infection control in each of the 100 hospitals. And I have to say, since 2001, when we started collecting this data, we've received data from 100% of our hospitals every year. So we're rather proud of that. When you look at the data over the 3 years we have here, you can see that nurses, physicians, technicians, and included support services are the main occupation groups that we look at. And nurses represent pretty consistently over time about 40% of all the injuries that are reported in the system, followed by physicians at 32%, and then technicians, which includes your phlebotomist and your OR tech, about 19%. You can see that our data is pretty stable over time, and I have to say for all of the years that we've been collecting data, we have not seen a dramatic decrease in the numbers. And while we don't have information on underreporting, we would like to think that reporting is improving as keeping things steady. When you look at just injuries to nurses, you can see the different types of devices that they're being injured with, hypodermic needles being the most frequent device reported. And when we break this out by safety versus conventional device, 54% of the injuries with hypodermic needles are with safety devices, but still 40% are with conventional devices for those lacking engineered Sharps injury prevention feature. You can see with butterfly needles, however, that 77% of the injuries are with safety needles. I'm going to talk about what questions that raises a little bit later. When we look at it by department, you can see that a majority of the injuries on the inpatient unit are with safety devices. And the flip of what's happening in the OR and procedure rooms. We did 1 year look at the distribution of injuries by safety and non, and when we excluded scalpels and suture needles, we only saw a slight decrease in the percentage of injuries with safety devices. So, well, obviously in the OR, those are the majority of the devices used. When we look at it across the entire surveillance system, those aren't making a big impact. So we have a lot of devices without safety features that are still being used in the facility. When we looked at the injuries by procedure, consistently our top three procedures have been injection procedures, blood procedures, and Lyme procedures. And just to give you a comparison, when we look at, for those 3 years, the entire surveillance system, including all occupation groups, injection procedures account for only 23% of the injuries, blood procedures 19%, Lyme procedures 9%, and suturing 21%. You can see that the difference here when we focus the occupation groups just nurses. And what I'm going to show you in the next pairs of slides are looking at two different kinds of procedures and comparing injuries with conventional devices, those without safety features, to injuries with devices with safety features. And what I just want to point out here is the difference in what's happening with injuries that occur during disposal. So you can see that 19% are occurring blood procedures with conventional devices, 19% occur during disposal, and 12% are improper disposal, so that's leaving it on a table or in a mattress or putting it in the trash. And then when you look at injuries that happen with safety devices, you can see that those disposal-related injuries drop dramatically, only 10% during Sharp's disposal and 3% with improper disposal. But what you see here, that you obviously wouldn't see with the conventional, is this activating safety feature, and that's 13% of the injuries, and then 4% of failure to activate the safety. So again, that raises some questions about what's happening with the safety devices, which leads with Bill's point. When we look at the same distribution with injection procedures and conventional devices versus safety devices, we do see recapping needle at 14%, and then the Sharp's disposal at 22% and improper disposal at 6%. I should mention this collision with coworker or Sharp, we are working to get rid of that category because what we get sometimes in our raw data is stuck self collided with Sharp. The way I look at it, everybody stuck themselves. Everybody collided with a Sharp. So we're trying to figure out a way to sort of move that out of the options that hospitals can give us for an answer. When we look at safety devices and injection procedures, you see that activating the safety feature accounted for almost a quarter of all of the injuries. And the disposal-related injuries went down to 9% for during Sharp's disposal and 2% for improper disposal. But we're still seeing recapping of needles. And as everybody knows, that has not been permitted by OSHA since the early 80s and 90s. And but the one-handed method is allowed. But we have people who say to us, oh, it's the anesthesiologist in the operating room doing multiple administration of lidocaine or whatever. And that's no excuse. And also, they make up like 2% of our injuries. So it's not the anesthesiologist. So some of the data limitations, we don't know anything about underreporting in Massachusetts. We do know that nationally, underreporting, a very conservative estimate is that 50% of the injuries go underreported. When you look at it by different occupation groups or by different facilities, that can be upwards of 80, 90%. We don't have specific information on purchasing of devices by hospital, so that makes doing rates by device challenging. However, our strength is that we have a census of all hospitals and that our data is not biased by voluntary reporting. While 21 states have legislation on the books regarding needle injury prevention, I believe that we're the only state that has all private sector hospitals reporting their data to us. Because our regulations mirror very closely the OSHA regulations, we feel that one of the reasons we're able to get all of this data is that hospitals know by completing the annual summary of Sharp's injuries for Massachusetts, they're also completing the requirements for OSHA. And we've also found that this has provided a model that can be used in other settings, and we're doing some home care work that Natalia is going to be talking about tomorrow. So in conclusion, we know that many standard devices, conventional devices, are still in use, hypodermic needles making up a large chunk of those. But at the same time, the percentage of injuries involving devices with safety features is increasing, as you saw with butterfly needles. Sharp's disposal continues to be an issue, and we need definitely more information about underreporting. And when we look at conversions, early on it was converting from conventional devices to safety devices. Now we need to start looking at converting from those first-generation devices that were two-handed activation, very active activation, to second, third, fourth generation where it's passive. So as you're withdrawing the IV stylet, the safety automatically engages. There's nothing extra the healthcare worker needs to do. It's one-handed. Dr. June Fisher in San Francisco has done a lot of work advocating for this move from the older generation to newer generation. So when we look at the hierarchy of controls and we think about elimination substitutions, the first thing you want to think about, changing from suturing injury, so not only the use of blunt suture needles, which are appropriate for only a limited number of procedures, to doing like suturing skin using glues or staples. Injections, getting rid of injection with needles and looking at alternative deliveries of medication like the Plumas nasal spray or oral administration of medication. When we look at engineering controls, needleless IV systems have been around for a long time. However, I can tell you that within our surveillance system, we see injuries injecting into Lyme, into needleless Lyme with syringes. So it's not just the use of the needleless IV, but it's making sure that the entire system is used appropriately. And then I mentioned that switch from conventional to safety needles. Administrative controls, not only the placement of Sharps disposal containers, but how often they're being replaced. Purchasing policies. We did a site visit for 20 hospitals last summer and really found out that we thought purchasing would be centralized in many places. If not, different units can order what they want. So you lose control over what's coming into the hospital. So if we can centralize that, then hopefully somebody can act as the gatekeeper. And along with that, making sure that nurses are involved in the purchasing department directly so that they know this device that's being ordered, what it's used for, and it doesn't have any safety features, so we're not letting it come into the facility. Injury reporting procedures, making sure that people know where to go when they get injured. And one of the other administrative controls is making sure that when you look at who's doing different procedures, we've seen a lot of hospitals get rid of their phlebotomy teams and get rid of their IV teams, and as a result, they saw an increase in injuries, but now some of them are going back the other way. So thinking about who's doing what, and we know that people who are less educated, or I should say less educated, are sort of early on in their career, less experienced, have more injuries than those who are more proficient in certain procedures. So work practice controls, no recapping, saw a significant proportion of injuries occurring with recapping, and then the use of neutral zones in the OR and no hand assist. So I do want to acknowledge we're fortunate enough to have several students who come through, so Shonda Beattie from BC who helps with this. We have a state-mandated advisory committee made up of not only industry but labor, and so we rely on them heavily as we're doing our work. And then all the infection control and employee health staff who report our data to us. Without them,